You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, you. Welcome to this week's episode. It's just going to be me and you and all of your questions. This episode is coming out a couple of hours late because I have been running around working 16, 18 hours a day for the past week for the Explore More Bodies Summit, and I crashed. So I treated myself to many hours of sleep and decided to just put this episode out a few hours late so that I could take care of me. And I am feeling rested and rejuvenated and ready to be here with you. So I just want to remind everybody who's listening, my porn workshop, hands down, is all about how porn can heal and connect and be ethical. It's streaming online now. It's $24. You get a 45-minute video with me all about porn, and then a workbook full of questions that you can either use on your own or with a partner to start having really interesting and new conversations about porn, plus a resource list on how to learn more about ethical porn, where to find it, who's creating it, all the porn stars and creators that I follow online. There's a 15-minute shame video all about how we can get better at kind of naming and navigating our feelings of shame. And then the Pleasure Mechanics offered this really fun little bonus that's all about how to do embodied masturbation, since a lot of people tend to just kind of check out or numb out when they're masturbating to porn. And this is about how can we actually like slow down and savor it. So I hope you'll check that out. There's a link in the show notes. And I have this amazing article that I came across. It's called 20 Things Guys Have Actually Said to Me in Bed. I will, of course, link to it. And it's this list of just the terrible, terrible shit that people think and say when it comes to sex, because we're just all so poorly educated, not only in like sex, but also in how to treat other human beings and how to have conversations about the things that we want and stereotypes. And it had me rolling. So I'm going to just read a couple of them. And if you want to read the rest, you can head to the link in the show notes. So one of them is, I once asked a guy if he would go down on me, and he told me, if that's what you want, you should just fuck a girl. In high school, I was on a date with a guy at Pizza Hut. I was holding my plastic glass of Pepsi with one hand, playing with the condensation on the outside of the cup. My date said, I know what you're doing. And I made a quizzical face. He responded, you're simulating a hand job. Here's another one that I love. One dude told me not to wear black bras. He said, boys only like bright colors. And then he demanded that I go lingerie shopping. On that note, a dude also once told me not to wear panties with polka dots on them because I feel like I'm fucking a 5-year-old. So apparently commenting on other people's lingerie and underwear is a thing. Don't do that. To further this trend of dudes telling me what kind of underwear to wear, one guy actually told me never to wear the same bra or panties twice, that every time we fucked, I had to be wearing something different. One time, a dude told me he couldn't find my clitoris. A guy once woke me up by poking his erect penis against my leg. I seriously hate when men do this. Despite my not reciprocating the interest, he climbed on top of me and started taking his boxers off. I'm not, like, ready, I explained. Annoyed, he said, what do you want me to do? Like, kiss you? It's so terrible. Like, it's literally, these could be scripts from a movie, like a Amy Schumer movie or something. It's cracking me up. And my favorite, this is by far my favorite. One time a dude told me with each thrust how many babies he was giving me. 1 million, he moaned. 2 million. I'm not sure he understood the difference between sperm and babies, or intercourse and ejaculation for that matter. That is the state of sex education in our culture, people. There are 21 of these gems. They are all terrible and sexist and misogynistic. And of course, like, gender essentialist, you know, she assumes that if you have a penis, then you're a guy. But it was cracking me up. I had tears in my eyes. So I will absolutely link to that if you want a little chuckle. And now we will dive into your questions. Brittany wrote in with a subject line of seeking sexy events. Hey, Dawn, thank you so much for opening me up to so many possibilities and for helping me to be comfortable in my own sexuality. I would love to become more involved in the kink community, and I want to go to events, expos, classes, panels, all of it. Is there a good online resource where I could find sexy and educational events in my area? I live in Massachusetts. Much love, Brittany. Thank you for writing in, Brittany. I get questions all the time from people trying to find events in their area. So right now, probably the most extensive online resource for finding events is going to be FetLife. If you go to FetLife, you know, there's lots of amazing things about FetLife and just as many problematic things. It's not the best design site, and there are just swarms and swarms of gross folks who are shitty and abusive. But there are also amazing people creating amazing community and listing their events there. And I learned so much about what kink could be and what it is to other people and just how different and incredible it can be. So FetLife.com is definitely a place to start. They have thousands of events all around the country and around the world listed there. You might also want to check out the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health. It's in Rhode Island, but they often get involved in events that are in that whole Northeast area. They do all kinds of classes and trainings and workshops, so that's probably worth checking out. I would also look to see if there's any sex positive or feminist toy shops in the Boston area, or, you know, the area, the metropolitan that's closest to you, depending on where in Massachusetts you are. I don't know if Oh My Sensuality Shop in Northampton is still open, but you might want to check that out. Joellen Naughty has it on her list of her superhero sex shops. So Oh My Sensuality Shop, and then Good Vibrations, that is in Brookline, might also be a place to check out. The feminist sex positive stores often have workshops, sometimes that are free, held by local kinksters. So that can be a really great way to just like see demos and meet people who are in your community. I would also take a look and see if you can find any munches in your area. Again, that's going to be on FetLife. You can also check Facebook and just see if there's any kinky communities if you put in nearest major city and search for something and just see if maybe there's some groups kind of hiding on Facebook. The hardest part is usually finding community and just kind of getting started with who are the groups, when do they meet, where are the places? And then once you find that, you can start networking and finding other events that are going on, both private events and the bigger events. So I hope that gives you at least a jumping off point. And to anybody else who's listening, wondering the same, start with FetLife and then check to see if there's any feminist and sex positive shops near you. I know the shops that were in the Washington, D.C. area constantly had free and or, you know, $5, $10 little events where you could come and see rope work or flogging or whipping. So definitely start there. Have fun, Brittany, and good luck. So a couple of weeks ago, I fielded a question from a listener who was asking how they can find someone to watch them. Her and her boyfriend really wanted to have someone come and watch them have sex. And I offered some thoughts from talking to people you know to placing an ad on Craigslist. And I actually got a report back. And it said, "You answered my question about being watched a month ago. First, I love your show. I listen every week and also went back and I'm listening to all of the older episodes. Second, thank you for answering. My boyfriend and I loved your advice. We didn't post any ads online because we're in a very rural area and I'm a school teacher. I didn't really want any pictures online. We did, however, ask a close girlfriend of ours who is very sex positive out to dinner with us, and we told her what we were looking for. She ended up coming home with us that night. We had a blast. She started off just watching, and then we decided to invite her into the bed with us. We both fingered her, and my boyfriend ate her out and choked us both. We've invited her over a couple more times, and we are all enjoying it. My boyfriend loves when she comes over because it makes me squirt way more than usual. So thank you so much for the update. I'm so glad that you got up the courage to talk to someone and to invite them in, and it ended up being amazing. That's the best that all of us can hope for in a situation like that. So thank you. I got this really funny email from someone named Jen that just said, thanks for the palate cleanser. I'm going to redact a few names from this just because I am friends with one of the people mentioned and I just want to kind of respect them. But the email says, earlier this evening, I listened to Redacted's podcast where she interviewed Redacted talking about sexless marriages. The person being interviewed talked a lot about losing desire for sex because you've lost desire for your partner. She basically blamed it on one partner gaining weight and aging, then said that those partners suffered from a bad body image because they were overweight and aging. Her advice to overcoming a sexless marriage where one partner has a bad body image, in quotes, was to go dye your hair, lose some weight, get Botox, and wear makeup. So let me get that straight. The sex therapist is saying that your partner is fat and old and their sex organs don't work like they used to. So of course you don't want to have sex with them. They must be fixed. What the fuck? I have to say, Redacted, the host, tried really hard to interject some reason into this train wreck of an interview, but the guest full out disagreed and repeated her message. Fix your self-worth by losing weight, dyeing your hair, putting on some makeup. I think I threw up a little bit at that point. So I just want to say a big thank you for your Explore More Summit Bodies edition. Listening to your interviews helped me cleanse my palate from the horrible taste of that so-called sexpert that she left in my mouth. Keep on fighting the good fight. Thank you so much, Jen. I totally agree. I think there's a lot of folks out there who need to confront some of the stories they hold about who's valuable, what's valuable, what we want, what we don't want. Because I think oftentimes when we're kind of in that expert category, in quotes, because I can't ever be an expert on you and you can't ever be an expert on me. So it's kind of a loose title, but you know, I think so many experts need to really examine the stories that they are sharing with the world, because often those stories we share come from really problematic, painful places, and we kind of don't even realize it. So I think part of our responsibility as sex educators, therapists, counselors, is to constantly be looking at what are the stories that we have bought into, and who might that be harming, and who is it holding back? Who is it oppressing? What do we need to confront in ourselves? And I think people who don't do that work sometimes end up offering advice that is even more isolating and shaming. We just heard that on Dan Savage's show a few weeks ago with Buck Angel. You know, when you haven't confronted some of your super trans misogynistic stories, then you end up giving advice that really, really hurts folks. So thank you so much for writing in, Jen. I had such a wonderful time doing the Bodies edition and just talking all about body politics and diets and weight stigma. It's something I can't wait for us to get rid of. On to the next question. I got this really wonderful email. It literally is four words with four exclamation points. And it's from Nugget. And I suspect because the email itself is just a little nugget and it just says, I love your show. Thank you, Nugget. That made me giggle so much when it came in. Nandi wrote in with a subject line of fat and confused. And it says, Hi, Dawn. I've been listening to your podcast for a few months now on Spotify. And I love the fact that you talk about a vast variety of important topics. I haven't heard some of your beginning podcasts. I started on a subject I was interested in and then just kept moving forward. You are the first person I have ever heard talk about fat phobia. I have PCOS and a rare hormone imbalance that has caused me to gain weight, even with dieting and exercise. Over the past years, I fell ill with a number of problems. One thing my doctors kept saying was that I was morbidly obese. I always prided myself on not looking exactly how much I actually weigh, according to the numbers on the scale. I get that they're doctors and it's their job to make sure I'm healthy. About 4 months ago, I started to feel ashamed of the way I looked. I don't want to go out for fear of the way people would look at me. My boyfriend is very fit, and comments have been made comparing me to him, that I'm much bigger than him. It's very stressful to hear. I thought I could be all feminist power, love your body, fuck the haters. But due to the way my brain is set up, it's just not possible. My family and friends all say I'm beautiful and have a great personality. But why can't I associate being fat as beautiful? I'm now having bariatric surgery in a few weeks. It's the most beneficial thing for me, especially with my other health issues. But why do I feel like a failure? Because I couldn't love myself at the weight and shape I'm at now. I've survived many things, and I've been able to overcome a lot. But this is something I can't seem to shake. I didn't intend to write so much, but the words kept coming out. There's so much more I want to write. Do you have any advice or books or anything to help me love me for who I am at any weight and shape? Thanks. Oh, Nandi. Yes. So I did write back to Nandi immediately and suggested that she watch the Explore More Summit. So to everybody who didn't get a chance to watch it, there is a resources page that I will link to for this episode. If you go to exploremoresummit.com/resources, that page is full of Instagrammers and folks on Twitter and experts and so many books and a bajillion random articles that are all in this exact space. Because the entire world around us is designed to make us hate ourselves. Everything around us is designed to make us feel like if we aren't trying to fix ourselves or get better or change ourselves in some way, whether it's to lose 5 pounds or 500 pounds or to tone that body part or to bleach our teeth or to shave our legs and laser off the hair, then there's something wrong with us. And the truth is, there's something wrong with the world and with our culture. And that's what that entire summit was about. So the first thing I want to offer is it can be really, really hard to start changing these conversations, especially when we have doctors that have not committed to health at every size approaches. So one of the things I would recommend is go to the Health at Every Size website and see if there's a doctor in your area who has committed to that approach. It is well researched and has lots and lots and lots of studies behind it. Linda Bacon, who was one of the first folks to start the Health at Every Size dialogue, has endless papers and books about the approach. But basically, more and more doctors are starting to opt in. Because when you have a $66 billion a year industry that is dieting, and 95% of people fail at it long term, the problem is not you. Now, the amazing thing is the diet industry uses messages that say, when you succeed, it's us, and when you fail, it's you. But we've all bought into it because of the magazines and the television shows, and because, unfortunately, so many doctors and nurses are deeply entrenched in fat phobia and believing that if we just make fat folks look like thin folks, then they'd magically be healthy. And we know that's not true when we really sit down and think about it, but that doesn't change the messages. So I would definitely look for a Health at Every Size doctor in your area who can help you find ways to feel good and to nourish yourself and to focus on your overall wellness, including your mental health. It can't just be about your physical body. Because if you change your physical body and you haven't addressed the mental stuff, you will feel just as disconnected and disappointed as you did before. So someone who can kind of take that holistic approach could be a life-changing experience for you. I also want to offer that if you start filling your social media feeds, and I mean like flooding them with people who do anti-diet culture work, who are in fat bodies, who are models and activists in a variety of bodies and shapes and sizes, including disability activists, it really starts to shift the way you experience your body. So my Instagram and my Twitter feed and my Facebook at this point are full of people who do this work and who show their bodies off, even on days when they don't feel happy in their body. And that can be a revelation. It can be shocking, actually, to then go back out and look at mainstream media and realize just how narrow and, I don't know, uninteresting it all is. So fill your social media feed with people who are in a variety of bodies. And there are so many books available. Definitely go to exploremoresummit.com/resources. Intuitive Eating book is a wonderful book that's an alternative to dieting. There are books about sex for fat bodies, like Hannah Blank's Big Big Love and Curvy Girl Sex by Elle Chase. Of course, Virgie Tovar has a book, and Jess Baker, 10 Things No One Will Tell Fat Girls or Fat Chicks, I can't remember. That one's fantastic. And I think the most important thing to remember is loving your body should never be the goal. Now, if you love your body, that's fantastic. And if you love your body most of the time, that's also fantastic. But I think there's so much more power in focusing on body neutrality. How can we just have a totally neutral experience with our bodies? How can we cultivate relationships where we are just simply coexisting with them in a really respectful way, where we know how to listen to our body, where we know how to nourish it in the ways that it most needs, you know, whether that's food or water or movement or joy and laughter and mental health nourishment, body neutrality, where we're not trying to force ourselves into someone else's mold. And that includes love. You know, so much of body positivity at this point has been love your body, love yourself. But that's someone telling you how to feel about your body. And no matter what your body looks like, you're just going to have days where you're kind of meh about it, or you're angry at it because it's hurting or it's feeling stiff, or maybe because it's changed in some way. And we need to allow space for all of those ups and downs. The one thing I want to say is no matter what your body looks like, no matter what size it is, no matter what the ability is, no matter how it's changed, it's never wrong. Your body is always working its very hardest on your behalf. Always. And when we really start to think about that, when we really start to think about the fact that no matter what we do to our body, it always tries its hardest. It always shows up 100% for us. It's doing the best that it can all the time, based on what we choose to give it or deny it. I think that can create some kind of awe and some wonder of, if my body is always trying its hardest based on what I give it, what if I started listening to my body a little more and really gave it what it was asking for and craving? Maybe that would really create a new experience. We're also allowed to do whatever we need to survive in this world. And while I think bariatric surgery is something I would not choose for myself, at least at this point, I have a right to change my mind, and you have a right to do whatever you need to do to survive. It comes with risks. And there's lots of people in the fat activist community who have really big feelings about the risks associated with that. You know, one of the things that Reagan Chastain likes to talk about is that, you know, some people choose bariatric surgery to help with things like high cholesterol or high blood pressure or diabetes. And you can manage high cholesterol and diabetes with a variety of treatments for many, many, many years. And that surgery can be very costly to people. The bottom line is you get to decide what you want to do with your body no matter what. So whether that's bariatric surgery or it's some other kind of surgery or it's some kind of, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's your body. You get to do whatever you want with it. And are there people that you can work with that would help you ease the mental burden and the fears and the anxiety? Because sometimes rewriting those stories is exactly the thing that our body most needs. It's complicated and it's messy, and the world is hard and cruel and awful. And I think one of the biggest betrayals that happens in our world is when our medical teams prioritize their ideas about what our bodies should look like over our own and push us to do things that aren't always the best thing for our body. So take some time and just sit with it and see what would really serve you. If it's bariatric surgery, then you get to make that choice. If you have doubts or questions or fears, you get to decide maybe this isn't the time for me and I want to try some other things first. That's also super valid. And people might get angry at you. They might feel disappointed. There's all kinds of things that might come up, but you need to prioritize you. I think the other thing I want to mention is there's always going to be bad days. There's always going to be changes that happen. You know, our bodies, as we age, do all kinds of things. Our bodies, as we acquire different kinds of disabilities and illnesses, do all kinds of things. And it can be really disappointing, and it can lead us to feel really angry and disconnected and depressed. And that's all so valid. And finding people who can help support you through that, like a really good therapist or counselor, can be such a powerful way to help kind of move through some of that and heal some of that. But the bottom line is your only job is to survive and to do it in a way that feels as good as possible for you. I hope that was helpful. There's so much I want to say on the subject, but I also don't want to make this entire episode into me soapboxing about this. So please check out the resources. Please take care of you in whatever way possible and whatever you need to do. And know that no matter what choice you make, people are going to be angry at you. And no matter what choice you make, people are going to have opinions about it. Whether you get the bariatric surgery or you don't, there are going to be people who have big feelings about both decisions. So this decision cannot be about them. It cannot be about making other people happy. It cannot be about making your doctors happy. It cannot be about wanting to, you know, have a different body just for the sake of others, because there will always be people who have shitty things to say about the decisions that you make or don't make. So this has to fundamentally be for you. Good luck. Thank you so much for writing in, Nandi, and please take care of you. So Mastodon wrote in with a subject line of horny hubby. Hi, Dawn. Big fan since the beginning. I'm a cis hetero male in my late 30s. I've been with my wife for over 10 years. We have a great partnership and a lovely child. I'm afraid that a few years ago, a monster was released in our relationship. For several months, we were sleeping with a good friend. It was fun, but ended badly. We've learned from our mistakes and definitely would have done things differently. After that, we dabbled in opening up the relationship, but in the end, my wife didn't want that to continue. The problem is, I want more extracurricular activity. I never really did until the sex with our friend. Compounding the problem is that my wife isn't that adventurous in bed. We have fun together, but she just basically wants PIV missionary 99% of the time. She gets off quickly, and therefore, so do I. I guess we're the opposite of the cliche. As the man, I want more teasing and play. I've made several overtures, suggested games and buying toys, but she's just not interested. Since our threesome experience, I really want variety and adventure. I've gone to strip clubs a couple of times just to get some contact with a variety of women. And it's a good thing I don't have a ton of money or time, because otherwise I'd be there a lot. I've considered hiring a sex worker, but I'm conflicted. I don't want to be a cheating piece of shit. But part of me thinks that life is short, and I should try to have some experiences. I've only had about 4 partners, and I want to scratch this itch. Help! Thank you for writing in, Mastodon. I know you are not alone. My inbox tells me so. In this, both folks who are masculine and folks who are feminine struggling with the exact same thing. Here's the rub. You can want all the things in the world, but if you and your wife have an agreement for a certain type of relationship, then the only way to ethically kind of move forward from here is to renegotiate that with her. And there's a lot of things that can happen from that. Basically, everything that you're sharing with me, what I'm hearing is a fear of actually having some really hard conversations. And you have to kind of make some decisions, right? Like, how important is your marriage to you? Start there. Is this something that you really do want and you want to be committed to and you want to prioritize? Is it something that used to be really important to you but feels less important now? Maybe it's become a different type of relationship for you. Maybe now it feels more platonic than sexual. Really sit down and think about what your marriage means to you. Then, once you have a really clear idea on what it means to you, I think you can start making some decisions about how you want to move forward. Because ultimately, the only way to not be a cheating piece of shit, as you said, is to actually articulate what it is that you want, your concerns, your fears, to open the dialogue and just to have new conversations. This could be a fantastic place to get a sex therapist or a sex coach who is sex positive to help kind of mediate and explore some of these things for the two of you. But ultimately, you're going to have to engage conversation with your wife. Maybe start by getting really curious about her experience, because I'm hearing lots about what you're looking for and also stories you're telling yourself about her experience. But how much have you actually gotten curious about her experience? What is sex like for her? What does sex mean to her? What does sex mean to the relationship for her from her perspective? What's been her most pleasurable sexual experience? What are her sexual fantasies? Does she ever masturbate? And when she does, what does she think about? What would make the most incredible sexual pleasure for her? And start there. It might surprise you, some of the things that she's interested in or some of the things she's scared of. You know, is there something that she's always been interested in or curious about and never had the courage to ask or bring up? I think if you can start with some curiosity about her experience and what's happening for her and why she likes certain things, you don't want it to be an inquisition. You don't want it to be like you're forcing her to tell you these things. It has to be a thing that you practice and cultivate over time, where it becomes clear that you being curious about her is from a place of genuine curiosity and vulnerability, and not because you're trying to manipulate her into something. I think that can be a really powerful place that helps us to rewrite our stories, because it's clear you have a very specific story in your head about her. And maybe it's because you've already had these conversations and that just didn't get communicated. I mean, I know you just said that you've tried suggesting games and buying toys. But have you actually said, like, I would really like us to try having different conversations, and I'm really curious about what all these things mean to you because I've been thinking about them for myself, and I'm happy to share some things with you too. And you have to be willing to be very vulnerable and to kind of be the one who's courageous and goes first and shares these things. The bottom line is, if you cheat, then you are making a decision to prioritize your needs ahead of your relationship. If you make that decision, then the likelihood that if your wife finds out, something catastrophic would happen to your relationship is very high. Also, I think that there's so much to be said for being able to express yourself and share your stories and share your desires. Just because we desire something doesn't mean we're going to die if it doesn't get met. And I think that's another story we have in our culture, right? Of sometimes we really want to try this new thing, and maybe our partner doesn't agree, and maybe they're not into it. And we can use that as a way to just fuel our fantasies and have really hot solo sex. If this ultimately feels like something that's really important to you and your life story, then you have to be willing to have those conversations. Because let me tell you, if you start cheating on your wife, the person that you're cheating with, it's really not fair to them either. You're certainly not going to find someone who's interested in ethical non-monogamy, who's willing to partner with you. So I think you just really have to kind of like take a step back and decide, how important is sex to you in kind of the grand scheme of things? This wanting that you have is valid and important, and there's nothing wrong with you for having it. And we also get to make choices about how to deal with those feelings and those desires. It might be really uncomfortable to have them and not follow through on them, but it's not going to kill you. There's other uncomfortable feelings that we all survive, grief and sadness and rage and all kinds of things. But because we don't have a lot of sexual literacy in our culture, we're never really told that, right? We have these urges and we're animals, and so we have to follow through on them. That's not at all how it is. Decide how important your marriage is, get some third-party help, and just start approaching conversations from a really new, curious place. Let her know you really want to know about her experience and how she's feeling about the relationship. It might be really awkward at first, and she might not be willing to talk because it feels loaded. Certainly, if you're coming at it with expectations, she's going to pick up on that. So it has to genuinely be because you really want to know her story, and because it would be fascinating to find out the things that she's thought over the years, why she loves PIV so much, what feels so good about missionary, and whether or not maybe she's tried other things at some point and why she didn't enjoy those things, you know, like genuine curiosity. Because I think if you can start having better conversations just about your experiences and her experiences and your experiences together, that'll help create a stronger foundation for then being able to kind of express some of the things that you're feeling. I think there's some power in being able to say, like, I'm experiencing so much discomfort. Like, I really loved when we opened our relationship up, and I think about it a lot, and I think it would be something that I would really enjoy. And if that's not something that you're interested in right now, this relationship is a priority for me, but I'd love to circle back, you know, in 6 months or a year and just like check in and see how you're doing with it. I just want to be able to share this with you. That can often be a huge release off the pressure valve, because we're not just like sitting and stewing and circling and thinking and dreaming and plotting and wondering when it's going to happen. So by being able to express that openly without it being a demand or without having to try and force her hand in anything, that could potentially just create a lot of relief for you and maintain that honest connection. And you can certainly make a request and she can certainly say no. And then you have to decide what you want to do. But I think so much of the stress that I hear in your email, Mastodon, that I hear in so many other emails is because people are trying to find ways to not be uncomfortable. And that's just not possible when you're in relationship with other human beings. Discomfort is a part of being in relationships, of being sexual, of being alive. And you just kind of have to choose what discomfort is the most tolerable. Is ending your marriage and having the discomfort of not having that marriage anymore, but the potential for endless adventure more doable for you? Is the discomfort of staying in your marriage and having some kind of clunky, awkward conversations over the next couple of months and years? It can take some time to break some of those kind of habits, especially when you've been with someone for 10 years, is that discomfort easier to tolerate? And you just have to kind of decide what feels best for you and your life and what you want for it. But I do think that it has to start with having some conversations with yourself and then having some potentially really uncomfortable conversations with your wife. It's not about manipulating her into a yes or manipulating her into opening up your relationship. It's about finding out where she is, making decisions about what's important to you, and then going from there, realizing that no matter where you go, there's probably going to be discomfort. It's not going to be a win-win-win all the time. And you might get lucky, and it might be. She might have been secretly thinking about it for the past couple of months, or you might bring it up. And then 6 months down the road, she says, yeah, actually, I'm interested in this. Great. And it's okay too, to let her know, like, here are some of the things I've been thinking about. Like, maybe I could work with a sex worker or professional, and see what her feelings are about that. But I think you have to lay the groundwork for open sexual communication before you get to that point. Otherwise, you're not going to have the tools to navigate what could potentially come after that. So start working on those tools, start working on that curiosity, examining your stories, the costs and the benefits, you know, and kind of go from there. Good luck and see where you end up. Miss Lou wrote to me and it says, during the moment, it's not my favorite thing to stop and ask questions. So when I was commanded to sit on someone's face, I panicked. How exactly do I do that? Is there a wrong way? I'm a BBW with really short legs. How can I be sexy while mounting my partner? And to do it without risking suffocation? We hadn't negotiated breath play. Thanks for any help, Miss Lou. This is one of those reasons why I'm a fan of talking before sex about things that you might want to do and enjoy. You don't have to, but it's helpful to not surprise someone with something that you haven't asked for before, so that they can ask maybe some logistical questions and share some of their concerns. So, you know, just a food for thought for folks out there. It might be uncomfortable, but is it as uncomfortable as being naked and not moving for 30 seconds while your brain freaks out about what to do next? I'm not sure. So to answer your question, Miss Lou, you just have to kind of get on there and figure it out. The person who's asking for you to sit on their face knows what your body looks like. They know that you're a BBW. They know how long your legs are. They know exactly what they're asking for. So the first thing is you have to just trust that. I know that's awkward. I feel super awkward sometimes still when that comes up. Also, for positions, sometimes it's just going to kind of be like, oh, that's not quite working. Okay, let's try this. Okay, let's try this. And knowing that being a little awkward for a couple of minutes while you shuffle pillows around and try and find just the right thing, it's going to be really easy to get back in the moment, right? I mean, like as soon as your pussy is surrounding their face, that's going to be hot for them because that's what they asked for. So it's okay to kind of move around. Like in my experience, facing, like if the person whose face you're sitting on is laying on the bed with their head towards the headboard and their feet towards the end of the bed, you can sit in both the forward direction where you're like facing their feet, and you can sit facing the other way where you're like holding onto the headboard. And it does make for very different angles for both their face and tongue and for your pussy. Sometimes you just have to kind of play with it and see like which one's most pleasurable for me, which one's most pleasurable for them. How am I comfortable? Can I hold this for a while? One thing that I've found is that if I'm facing feet, that my arms get tired if I'm kind of leaned a little bit forward so that they can do whatever they're doing with all their face, but still get air every once in a while. But my arms get tired if I have to stay like that for a really long time. And so we've actually found that if we pile a couple of pillows or a liberator wedge across his chest and stomach, then I can actually like lay on those and engage my arms a little bit less. And then my pussy is still on his face and I can hold that kind of forever. But then of course I don't have access to his cock. So it just kind of depends on like what you want to do. But the only way to figure it out is to just kind of like get on, ask them what they're going to do to let you know if they can't breathe. You know, like, hey, are you going to give me a couple of taps or are you going to make a muffled sound if you need some air? Alex is really good if I really am suffocating him and he hasn't gotten a breath in a few minutes to just kind of gently push up on me. And that tells me, okay, lean forward or lean back, depending on which direction I'm in. And then he takes a deep breath and he goes back in. It's totally natural that in that moment you are like, what the fuck do I do? And how do I not kill him? But, or them, I don't want to assume the gender of the person asking for you to sit on their face, but the person who asked knows that you're in a bigger body. They probably want to be surrounded by you. So then it's just a matter of you figuring out what's comfortable and what feels pleasurable for you too, because it's going to be your genitals that they're licking and sucking on. So make sure you find something that works. And even if that means, okay, I'm going to try this and let's see how it goes for just like a minute or two, and then we'll check in. And if we need to adjust, we'll adjust so that we can do it a little longer. And also know that like the mounting process is just, in my experience, awkward. I got to figure out a way to get my knee close to their head and then swing the other leg around, and there's just going to be ass everywhere, and that's just the nature of the request, and that's okay, and it can be fun and kind of awkward, but then as soon as you get into the licking and the pleasure part, you forget all about it. So, and I think that's kind of true for so many things in sex, right? Like it might be kind of awkward getting to the point, but then once you're both having fun, you forget that it was awkward at all, and it's just fun and yummy and delicious. So really great question. Totally just play with it. I know that's hard to do when it's a first time request. I probably would have been like, I have no idea what to do. Two, you know, if that request just came out of nowhere and it was my first time doing it, there it is. That's sex. Sometimes it's just awkward and you got to do your best, but enjoy as much as you can. And just remember, like, when we feel a little bit unsure, a little bit awkward, often we then try to center the other person's pleasure because we want them to have a great experience while we're kind of freaking out about what to do. It's so okay in that moment for you to say, like, what am I going to get out of this? And if it's that they get super turned on and so that turns you on, great. Or maybe you don't really like what they're doing with their tongue, but it's okay. But you get access to their genitals and you really want their genitals. Hot. That's a good trade-off too. Just know anytime we do anything for the first time, it's going to be fucking weird. And or it might be super delightful. And then the next time we do it, it's not as delightful. And we wonder what we're doing wrong. But that's humans for you. So thanks for writing in, Miss Lou. I hope whatever came of the face sitting request, it was fun and that you get a chance to do it again if it was delicious. Enjoy. So we're going to close with a really short, quick little question about hoodie sex. Well, what is hoodie sex? Let me read you Nick's question. Dawn, I have a strange fantasy fetish. I think my girlfriend looks so cute when she's wearing my hoodies. I want to fuck her doggy style while she's in one of my hoodies so I can pull back on the hoodie strings. Am I weird? My girlfriend has such a perfect perky butt. Nick. Well, Nick, hopefully if you've been listening to this show for any amount of time, you know the answer already, which is no, you're not weird because people like all kinds of things. Hoodie sex or... Just a couple of episodes ago, we had a guy who was super into like the puffy raised letters on t-shirts. He found that really delightful, rad. People like feet and alien sex and all kinds of stuff. People dress up like horses and clop around with saddles on their back. Literally, there's something for everyone. And the most important thing is to just acknowledge, as long as it's consensual and your girlfriend's like, yeah, I'll wear this hoodie because you think I look super cute and this could be fun and she knows you're going to pull on the strings. Not weird at all. It's just about acknowledging you want to try the thing and asking your partner or partners if they want to do the thing too and go at it. So to all of you out there who are wondering if you're weird, the answer is you're probably not. And or if you are, you're not alone because boy, is the world an interesting place. So thank you so much for listening, Nick. I hope by the time I answer this, you and your girlfriend have had lots of hoodie sex and you've pulled on all the strings while you've stared at her super cute little butt. And enjoy. Thank you so much for listening this week. And thank you so much for being patient with me because I know the episode's going up a little bit late on Sunday. I have so many exciting things coming up. Be sure to be tuning into O.School because I am now one of their pleasure professionals. I am going to be streaming starting in January every single Wednesday evening for free online live sex ed. I'm going to be focusing all about pop culture and the stories that it teaches us about sex and love. So please be sure to join in those conversations. Check out the porn workshop. That could make a really fun holiday gift for someone in your life. Otherwise, I will talk to you next week. This is Dawn Sarah. Bye.